This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Tony on this, dear CC Baxter and the Elevator Girl, which would I be, do you think? It's a Jack Lemmon character.
Yeah, well, anyway. I mean, I tend to take the female role in all this.
Okay, and I'll be CC. Well, I don't know, CC Baxter, Jack Lemmon,
be a bloke.
I've been listening to the podcast for over 3 years now, dating back to the days when the podcast was called Mark Kermode's Film Reviews, Radio to Go. I never knew it was called that.
Never heard of it. That was somebody. That was James King.
I've grown to trust the good doctor's reviews and enjoy most of his rants, but the whining about his not being able to keep up with the 12 movie releases a week was just too much. Tell Kermode to do the math. 12 films a week multiplied by 90 minutes a film does not constitute overwork.
Yeah, unfortunately, very few films are 90 minutes long nowadays.
Even if they're 120 minutes long, it's still... Anyway,
this listen, I'm not complaining. It's just an hours in the day thing. You know, the most you can get in a day is 5 screenings.
And this... which is, we are remiss in this. He says, a question about the Hello List. Yeah. Jason Isaacs, Kenneth Branagh, Stephen Fry, Fairport Convention, etc. Why no women on the list?
Well, shall we say sheer chauvinism on our part?
That'll be it.
Yeah.
I think we need to consider that. And we'll call a committee meeting of Privy Council members.
Yeah. Okay.
And Tony's in the Great Pacific Northwest.
But what you don't want to do is be guilty of tokenism.
Okay, well, how can we get a woman on the list which wouldn't appear to be token?
Well, it has to be, you know, a good reason. Okay. Other than tokenism.
All right, well,
is what I'm saying.
We'll see what gets suggested. Stephen, Simon, could you please pass on my congratulations, Dr. Kermode, on the public recognition that he's finally received? I refer, of course, to his starring role in Private Eyes, It's Grim Up North London. I always knew Jez and Quinn were gentlemen of taste. And the punchline, I mean, you have to see it in context, really.
Yeah, but even in context, I'm not interested.
Anyway, but it concludes with the people looking at iPlayer and saying it's great. One says, I'm discovering new depths and nuances in Laurent Laverne's oeuvre, and I never knew even existed. To which t'other one says, and Mark Kermode is strangely beguiling in slow-mo.
I think that's good. I've got a thing in my, what you call the smallest room in the house. I have a wall of shame of thinking, you know, because I've been in Viz quite a lot of times, and there was a thing in Empire called Mark Kermode's commode, and they'd done a picture of a commode with my head coming out of it. So I have all these up, and then there's that guy Martin Rowson, who you know the cartoonist. He did a cartoon at the Index and Censorship Awards in which he did.
I had my own strip in Viz for a couple of weeks.
Did you?
Yeah, The Adventures of Simon Salad Cream. Particularly
that's very
wonderful
good.
Piece.
The ones about me usually involve more swearing than that.
Ash from Stockport, dear Dr. Beat and the Miami Sound Machine.
Very good.
I'm an avid listener of the Film Review podcast and know of Mark's love of the horror genre. You spotted that.
Mm.
So I was wondering if he intends on going to this year's Fright Fest in London at the end of October, beginning of November. My friend has a film called Gnaw, as in G-N-A-W, as I've taken to spelling keywords in the programme, which is due to play there, which naturally he insists is good, but I expect him to say that. Therefore, I would like Mark's expert opinion on whether it was actually as good as my friend claims it to be.
Frightfest has been and gone.
Well, he says it's the end of October, beginning of November.
Well, there was a Frightfest just fairly recently, but there may be more than one in that case. I will certainly go and see any horror film that anyone points me in the direction of. The only thing I would say is that the bar has to be fairly high with horror, because there is an awful lot of bad horror cinema around.
Alex in South Wales. Dear Dr. Kermode, given your very public disdain over Guy Ritchie's current and past directorial efforts, I'm very curious as to whether or not you have yet seen his soon-to-be ex-wife's directorial debut, Filth and Wisdom, which I believe is opening in the USA this week and premiered a few months ago at the Berlin Film Festival. Just wondering if you think her first foray into filmmaking will subvert or strengthen your disdain for anything.
No, I haven't seen it, but it was apparent, wasn't it, that when this thing all came out in the press, that what had happened was she'd finally gone to see Rock and Roller and just said, right, that's it, I'm not having that anymore. Sorry, I'm off.
Absolutely stacks of movies, which we need to get to very, very shortly. So let's do a box office top 10 and see where we go, because we've got Burn After Reading, Eagle Eye, Free Jimmy and Igor.
Burn After Reading, as it's called in England, apparently.
It's going to end up a different film, though, isn't it?
It is, yes.
At number 10, Knights in
Not even Richard Blinky Gear can save it. It's a middle of the afternoon. I had to pay to go and see it in the cinema because I missed the National Press Show, and I like Richard Gere, as you know, and it's him and Diane Lane who I like as well, but it's just incredibly unremarkable and middle of the road, and it's what now passes for a sort of, you know, a grown up romantic story. And you know, I've always said this thing, but the thing with Richard Gere is Richard Gere only has one thing that he does. And the thing that he does is this. He closes his eyes, he looks down, he exhales, right? So this is great for radio, obviously. But what he does, no matter what
happens... Well, live stream, so mug to the camera.
Somebody,
like
which one is this? Is that one? He goes like this. Somebody says, so something important. And he goes... And that's it. And then when he gets excited, he goes... He blinks a lot. So he is just... He's a man who acts entirely with his eyelids. And doesn't matter what he's doing. Doesn't matter whether he's, you know, whether he's being Mayo in An Officer and a Gentleman or whether he's being the mad guy in Internal. It doesn't matter what he is. That's what he does. And I was one point when I was trying to count the Richard Gere blink factor. Did you see Chicago? He blinked so much in Chicago, I thought his eyelids were going to fall off.
I think I did, actually, now I come to think about it.
It was a blink every cut.
Brideshead Revisited at 9.
Brideshead Redecorated, still the best joke about it. I mean, the question is, why go back and do it again? I think the only reason is to see Emma Thompson, who is magnificent for all the time that she's on, but she's not on for long enough. Why are you holding up a cardboard cutout of your own face over your own face?
These are the cardboard cutouts from last week. I just thought I put them to good use.
Yeah, okay, because that's now really disturbing, because I'm now looking at a cardboard cutout of you with you behind it.
Got a big list of things that are good but not enjoyable, which we'll get to, but let's do the top 10 in a pithy way, and we'll get to Nick, and then some reviews if you're lucky. The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas at 8.
Still very good to see it holding on there so well in the top 10. I really hadn't expected it to do as well as it did, although I did admire it very much. So, you know, good for them. They clearly pitched that kind of mainstream thing just right. Difficult story for a young audience, and they appear to have, you know, got it just right.
Mamma Mia at 7.
Still there. What was it that Kevin Spacey said? Now and forever. And it is. It is now, because this must be now well into its getting double figures week, surely. It's been around the top 10 for ages and ages and ages, and it's still holding on in there. And as I've said before, I'll say it again, you need to have seen it in the cinema. It's not enough to just see it, you know, when it turns up at Christmas television or to see it on video. You have to have experienced it in the cinema.
With lots of other people.
Yeah. And there's the tagline for the theatre, you know, the theatre production still going on, is somewhere in the crowd there's you. You see what they did there? That's quite clever.
Line from a song.
Yeah, it is. A big thing or a small is what I wanted them to put, but they didn't.
City of Ember at 6.
You know, it's an ambitious and fundamentally intelligent, but essentially, who is it for? Children's a fantasy adventure. It has some great performances.
Is it for children, then?
Well, it's a sort of 12 rated, you know. No, it's not children. It's a sort of teenagers. The thing that people keep calling tweenagers nowadays, it's a sort of teenagers movie, and it's about a society living underground because, you know, something terrible has happened up top, but down underground they've all forgotten all about up top, and Bill Murray is leading the corrupt government, and these people have to break out. And there is a story about discovering the New Eden in there somewhere, and that it's designed to within an inch of its life, and yet it's just. I mean, I remember when I was watching it, thinking they've spent so much money, there's so much ambition. Who's it actually for? And I think the fact that it's underperforming in the top 10 proves that everyone else has the same issue.
Tropic Thunder is at 5.
Not as funny as it ought to be. As many people have said, the funniest things in it are perhaps the trailers at the very beginning. As we had that comment last week, somebody wrote in, they said the stupidest thing they'd heard in a movie cinema all year or something, was somebody saying, well, I'm not going to pay good money to go and see that. There is some, you know, quite edgy stuff with Robert Downey Jr. in blackface, but it generally suffers from having too much money. It would have been a much better movie if they'd given it much less money.
Taken is at 4.
I mean, what else is there to say about Liam Neeson goes to Europe and kills everyone because his, you know, nubile teenage daughter has been kidnapped by evil foreigners who have got a 96-hour limit before they can do anything terrifically evil, because that's how the plot works.
How to Lose Friends and Alienate People at 3.
Again, performed much better than I thought it would do. I mean, I think the film is fundamentally flawed. I think that what it's done is it's taken the rough edges off the story, and it doesn't have the harsh, you know, bite of its source material anymore. But clearly, the mainstreaming of it worked. I'm sure in America it's a whole different story. But it's I suppose heartening to see that the film did as well as it did over here. I have to say, it didn't make me laugh.
We have Mirrors at number 2,
which makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, is a remake of an Asian film that didn't make much more sense, but at least had some kind of internal coherence. There's a couple of creepy moments in it, but nothing more than that.
And the UK's number 1 this week is The House Bunny.
What did I say last week? Is it funny? No. Is it subversive? No. Did I laugh? No. Will it be number 1 in the charts next week? Very probably. Well, The Good Doctor is in. Mystic Meg, move over. I mean, hey, it just goes to demonstrate, you make a film with somebody dressed as a bunny girl on the poster, no one ever went broke underestimating the stupidity of the public.
Mayo at bbc.co.uk, get to all the correspondence and the reviews
and Hugh
coming
Hefner
up in just
a moment.
Hugh Hefner
is presumably laughing all the way to the bank.
Sorry, I thought you'd finished.
No, I just wanted to say that. Can I just say, incidentally, very quickly, read Linda Lovelace's book, Ordeal.
No, thanks.
And, you know, for a slightly different picture of events.
No, thanks. Things that are good but not enjoyable. Joseph in Brentwood is suggesting broccoli.
That's not true. Broccoli's delicious. I'm sorry. Love broccoli.
Alan in Doncaster, good but not enjoyable. Pink Floyd's film, The Wall. Mark in Leeds, things that are very good, not enjoyable. Pan's Labyrinth, great film, but don't think I'd want to go through it again.
Okay. Well, no, that's not. I have gone through it three times, and it's just, it is more, you know.
You're normal.
No, I am. And it's absolutely wonderful.
John from Super Leeds, Schindler's List, very good but not enjoyable. Michael Schumacher is the suggestion from Dougie in Penrith. He's a racing car driver.
I know who Michael Schumacher is.
Good but not enjoyable. Saving Private Ryan and Schindler's List. Robin in Northumberland suggesting
Steven Spielberg
that.
Featuring very big here, isn't he?
Jamie says, you lot are bad, but very enjoyable. What is this? Graham in London, having your appendix taken out. This is good, actually. Good, because it makes you feel better and stops you throwing up. But absolutely no way is it enjoyable.
Yes.
Marriage is also marriage. A suggestion from Dowd in Galway. That's Peter Cook in The Princess Bride. Did you spot that impression as it went through?
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
So, is it going to be burn after reading? First of all,
burn after reading.
Because there's some people just want to chip in before you get stuck into this. Lots of correspondence about it already. Dear Monstrous and Carbuncle, I've checked the lineup of reviews online today, and it's a bumper crop. However, it'd be nice to have a proper review of Burn After Reading. So, can this be done at the start? So that the Pacino-esque ranting of the good doctor doesn't result in you running out of time and it having to be squeezed into 5 minutes at the end of the show. I always enjoy this particular part of the week because it's a bit like Christmas Eve. We haven't got to the meat of the moment, but we're just teeing up here.
I'm your perennial Christmas Eve, aren't I? But never Christmas Day.
Dear Doctors Kermode and In Name Only, says Gordon, given the copies of the script of Burn After Reading would have had the words on the front page. Is this a comment on the inability of actors to follow simple instructions?
Very good.
Or did everyone involved have just really good memories?
Frum-bum-tsh.
And Dr. Paul in Derby, dear Butch and Sundance, well, if this ain't a rant, it'll do until a rant comes along. I suppose the first clue to the awfulness of Burn After Reading was the advert on TV. Is this a worse omen than an advert on the side of a bus or in the gents' toilet at the Hawthorns? Oh, brother, oh, brother, oh, brother, where are they? What have they done? Intolerable cruelty would be better than this cruel torture. What is so funny about intelligent people playing really stupid people doing really stupid things? The funniest thing in the whole film is someone showing someone else a photograph. Just what was the point of making this awful film? Miller's Crossing? No, he's blooming livid. Cheers, chaps, says Dr. Paul in Derby. Take it away, the good
doctor.
Well,
my work here is done as a result of that. No, look, here's the thing. The Coen brothers have always had this peculiar sort of dual strand to their career, which is on the one hand, they make all the films that you know that you really like Blood Simple, Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink, Fargo, Man with No Name, No Country for Old Men recently. And on the other hand, they have this whimsical streak which borders on zany, edging more often than not into quirkiness. And as I've said before, you know, the gap between quirky and irksome is very, very small, which is things like Raising Arizona, Hudsucker Proxy, Big Lebowski, which everybody other than me likes, Oh Brother Where Art Thou, which everybody other than me likes, Intolerable Cruelty, and that remake of The Lady Killers, which what on earth was all that about? And it's almost like it's part of what they do is that they, you know, if you look at a film like No Country, in this great existential darkness of that movie, and there is existential darkness in it, there's also this kind of, you know, absurdist comedy, and the line between comedy and horror in their films is very close. It's very interesting that at the beginning of their career, they were very closely associated with Sam Raimi because they worked on Crime Wave with him. And there was that similar thing about it, horrible and funny are, you know, sort of are evil sisters. And consequently, it seems that throughout their career, whenever they do something great, they have to kind of go on the back foot and do something fairly lame to sort of loosen up afterwards. And when people first saw Burn After Reading, which I am going to call it from now on, even if you're not going to join in.
Well,
on
I'm trying. I'm making every effort not to.
No, but the
mispronouncing things regularly is very irritating.
It is. The general opinion from the critics who saw it at whichever festival it was, I think it may have been Toronto, was, well, look, hey, you know, after No Country, surely they deserve to kick back a little bit. And that's kind of what they've done. But the question of whether you then watching it is something that you have to do. I mean, yes, it's great. There's a story in that book about the making of Heaven's Gate, the Stephen Buck book, Final Cut. This is going to make sense, which says that when whichever company it was, maybe New A, financed Woody Allen's film Interiors, it was one of the very few occasions in which a film company had allowed a director to make a movie because it might be good for the director to do it, as opposed to it might be good for the company or for the audience. And in the case of the Coens, it looks like that's the way it works. The only difference with Burn After Reading is it's star-studded and it's made money. So consequently, it's paid off. So we'll play a clip. Here's the plot, although I you know, hesitate to call it a plot, basically, is it's a zany caper. John Malkovich is working for the CIA. He's fired for drinking too much by a guy who's a Mormon. That's the joke. He wants to take revenge. He starts writing a tell-all memoir. Somehow he loses the disc of the memoir in the local gym at which worked Francis McDormand, who wants the money for a facelift, and Brad Pitt, who's sporting the best worst haircut since his
Cut
days of
chase.
Johnny Sweat. No, there is no chase, Simon.
Oh, okay, all right.
No, there is no chase. That's the whole point of what I've just... In fact, brilliant, well done.
Thanks.
That was the point. There is no chase.
Got to introduce the clip somehow.
Here's a clip
all right.
that That'll bears be. No relation to that at all, featuring George Clooney and John Malkovich, who I mentioned before. And I think Tilda Swinton's in this clip as well. And this is basically what the film's like.
Is that goat cheese?
Chèvre.
Yes, that is a goat cheese.
Because I have a lactose reflux and I can't...
You're lactose intolerant?
Yeah, but I can't.
Or you have acid reflux. They're different things.
I know what they are.
So you misspoke.
Well, thank you for correcting me.
You should try the chèvre, Harry. It's very good.
Oh, yeah. I can eat goat cheese. I was just telling your husband that I have a condition where I'm going to anaphylactic shock when I...
Harry works in the Marshal Service, yeah.
Oh, I'm on the legislative side. I work with Senator Hobby.
Yeah. I was with Treasury dealing with the Homeland Security. I'm with the Marshals now.
If you want, he'll show you his great big gun.
That's very funny. Gun's no big deal. 20 years of Marshal Service, I never discharged my weapon.
That sounds like something you should be telling your psychiatrist.
I don't have a psychiatrist.
It just goes on like that, in that kind of way. And then there's a couple of momentary explosions of violence, and people at regular intervals die, and the Russians get involved, and the Russians get uninvolved, and there's a lot of stuff with Richard Jenkins, who's actually quite funny, and there's a lot of stuff with J.K. Simmons, who's actually quite funny. But these are all individual bits, and it's funny because, in a way, the best way of describing it is a movie that is a trailer of itself. You know, when you see the clips, you see the bit with Brad Pitt running on the thing with the funny hair. You see that clip that we've seen there has been on television quite a lot of George Clooney saying, you know, I've got a lactose problem, and John Malkovich picking him up about it. It's all these inconsequential bits. And then after a certain amount of time, it stops. And this doesn't stop in any way that's a plot end. It's like they kind of went, how many pages is that? 92? Fine, stop. And then the story ended. And there is a sense in all of it, which is, I'm sure they really enjoyed making it. I'm sure they really enjoyed each other's company. I'm sure that they looked at it and went, oh, look, all these stars, all this zaniness. It's crazy. It's wacky. It's quirky. It's offbeat. It's kooky. It's, you know, and all those things which I really don't like, because zaniness really bothers me. I have a real, you know, I am zany intolerant. I am, you know.
Define zany.
Well, zany is when people do it like, hey, Simon, I've come into work today wearing a tea cozy on my head because I'm zany.
Savile.
I don't think zany is quite the right word for Jimmy. No, Jimmy Savile is more...
Adrian Just.
No, definitely. No, but actually, funnily enough, Adrian Just is a very... What's happened to Adrian Just?
Carry on.
Okay, fine. That's a very good example. But zaniness, I don't do, okay? And watching all these big stars and thinking, the whole point of the film is, Brad, we've cast you in this movie, you've got stupid hair and you're an idiot. Fine? Great. That's the role. John, we've cast you in this movie because you're going to do the angry voice that you do, and you're an idiot. Fine. George, we've cast you in this movie because you're going to look ugly. And the gag is going to be that everyone knows you're George Clooney, very handsome and intelligent, but you're going to play an ugly idiot. And that's it. That's the whole concept of the film. Famous, beautiful, almost like your letter writer there said, famous, beautiful, intelligent people playing stupid, ugly people.
And
boom.
That's it.
And if you will, boom. Now, I would be lying if I said... No, I wearing thin on you this week?
Just when I thought it was over.
Nearly done. Just when you thought it was finished. I would be lying if I said there weren't moments that I chuckled. But the interesting thing about them is that every one of those moments could be taken completely out of context and played on, you know, YouTube or something, and they would have exactly the same. It's like there's no cumulative power. It's just a load of bits. It's a load of individual bits that individually Some of them are quite funny and some of them aren't. But together, it's just a bag of bits. But it happens to be a bag of Brad Pitt's bits or a bag of George Clooney's bits.
Okay, well, a lot of people would queue up for that.
And exactly as you say, that's what will happen. And will it be number one next week? Very probably. And people will say, did you see that film? It was hilarious. Brad Pitt played a stupid, ugly person. I just fell off my chair.
Would you rather that or House Bunny?
Well, I mean, obviously I'd rather this, because I think that after making this, the Coens will go back to make something dark and intriguing, whereas the people who made House Bunny will go back to being Pond Life.
We should say hello.
Who will probably develop gills and go back into the water in a kind of, you know, evolution. It's like Bill Hicks. We want our thumbs! That's where they're going to go.
To a selection of people. Viewers of the webcam will see these heads strung out behind me. I don't think you'll spot that on the live streaming. So do you want to say hello to them as they are strung up behind us here?
Okay. So I'd like to say hello to Kiefer Sutherland, because he wasn't very good in mirrors. Guy Ritchie. Can you turn Guy Ritchie round?
Okay.
So I don't have to look. Because I don't want to have to look at Guy Ritchie.
The whole thing might.
Yeah, that's fine. It'd be worth it. Then hello to David Morrissey, dressed as Gordon Brown. Hello to Keira Knightley, who's getting better with every movie. Hello to Jason Isaacs.
Do you think we should say, someone suggested Keira Knightley should be added to our list?
Yeah, let's... That's
although,
a good
idea. But if she's not interested in the... I don't know if she's interested in the programme.
No, in that case... Well, if we get an email from her, then we can introduce her on the list.
If Keira gets in touch, we'll say
hello to Jason Isaacs, who looked like that when I was at school with him. Hello to Jason Statham. Unfortunately, we don't have his freshly oiled torso there. Hello to Liam Neeson. Don't argue with him if you're a foreigner. Liam Neeson. Hello to Kevin Spacey, who's in Telstar. And hello to Simon Pegg, who keeps being in movies that aren't as funny as he is.
Next week, we should have Fairport Convention Focus strung up there, because that would be a very interesting sight.
And hello to Fairport Convention, particularly, especially for coming to see the gig, and they're lovely, lovely people.
So we continue. What's the next review?
The next thing we're going to do is we're going to do The Rocker and Young at Heart as a pair, because they're both rock movies, and I feel very strongly about at least one of them.
Is it a matched pair?
A matched pair?
Yes. Like a matched pair of Bösendorfers, for example.
I don't know what language you're speaking.
We'll continue then. You can get in touch.
How are you enjoying your stay in our country?
mayo@bbc.co.uk. Matched pair of Bösendorfers. Two pianos that work well together.
Anyone?
No.
Okay. John in Barcelona. Further to your correspondent's earlier email about his chum's film, Nor.
Nor.
Does anyone remember seeing a movie called Nor? K-N-O-R-R, as opposed to G-N-A-W. It really is a day for spelling out keywords on the
program. Wasn't Nor the name of a company that made... You know,
soup.
Soup.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, I saw it twice, my cup runneth over. I don't think it's a joke.
My cup runneth over. Yeah, they made cup of soup, didn't they? It was something like that. It'll be
yeah.
that. No, maybe not. Canoe.
Anyway,
they said it was one of those canoe. It's like I'm a canoe, we're another canoe. It was one of those canoe things. That was how they used to advertise it.
Flanners and Swan. Here comes it. Let's rock.
They rocked more than
Dean Friedman.
Yeah,
they did,
absolutely.
Tim in Nottingham, these disembodied heads you have hanging on the wall behind you are just a bit creepy. Is this a new movie review trend to go along with all the celeb hellos each week? Though I doubt you'd have enough room for the Yardbirds, Pentangle and the Electric Light Orchestra. Actually, you're right. The Yardbirds, we should have said hello to all
should
the Yardbirds.
Should have said hello to all the Yardbirds.
And Pentangle. And members of the Electric Light Orchestra.
And the Subways. Still on tour.
And Richard saying Sandra Denny was in Fairport Convention. She's a woman.
Yes.
So maybe when we say hello to Fairport Convention, it's members past and present.
Okay.
Dear Jack and Wendy Torrance.
Can I say hello to Linda Blair?
No.
Okay.
Dear Jack and Wendy Torrance, says Jamie Sherry, PhD.
Do you get that?
No, I don't.
The Shining.
Is it from The Shining?
Yeah.
I love the way you pointed at me, just to emphasise... The fact that you were going to be oh so much smarter than I was. It's from Jamie, PhD pending in 2010. This is qualifications that I'm about to get or at some stage
very
in my
good.
Life. Good but not enjoyable. Mike Lee's naked and a coffee enema. Enjoyable but not good. Scratching in Patigo and Weird Science. Hate all quirky, zany, annoying Coen films.
Good.
Really dislike The Big Lebowski, yet absolutely love The Man Who Wasn't There and No Country for Old Men.
Well done.
Definition of zany, Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam. I thought that was a good film.
I don't think he is zany in that.
I would rather watch Irreversible and Baise-moi on a loop than these films. Dear Simon Mark and the Gorgeous Bloke, what about, which is a reference to Gail, I'm afraid, I suspect. It might be Matt.
I momentarily thought it was me.
What about, no, hence
Simon and Mark and the Gorgeous Bloke.
What about having your teeth cleaned? Not good at the time, but feels good afterwards. Childbirth in Nancy and Leeds.
I had my teeth cleaned yesterday. It really didn't feel good at the time, but it feels so much better. I mean, I didn't clean my teeth. I had them clean.
Just not interested.
No, okay.
Anything else that's new?
Let's do two things together. The Rocker is the new movie by Peter Catania, who has sort of struggled to repeat the success of Full Monty, which was incredibly successful both here and in the and other side of the Atlantic, and went on to spawn a stage show. And it was one of those surprising things. I remember the first time I saw the Full Monty thinking, it's fine. I didn't think it was going to be a great big international hit, and then it was absolutely huge. And then after that, he made a movie called Lucky Break, which was seen by far fewer people. Something after that called The Opal Dream. I don't know who saw that at all. The story this time is that there is a washed-up rocker, a washed-up drummer, the rocker of the title, who was thrown out of the heavy metal band just as they were about to become absolutely huge, now marking time in a call centre. The plot machinations end up that his young nephew is in a band who are going to play at a prom, and they need a drummer, so he is pulled out of drumming retirement to drum for them, so he becomes the old rocker in a young, shoegazing, navel-gazing, indie emo-style band. Here's a clip.
Hello.
Hello.
Is Curtis at home?
Who is asking?
Rob. Ert. Fish. Man. My friends call me Fish.
Fish.
Oh, I'm the drummer in the band from the prom.
Oh. Oh, you're serious. Oh, wow. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, Curtis said that the drummer was older. I figured college.
So, and you're his older sister?
Oh, that's very flattering. No, I'm his mom.
No, you're not. Seriously, you're not. What is your name?
Oh, well, usually Curtis's little friends call me Ms. Powell.
Ms. Powell?
Mm-hmm.
There's the cutest little jazz club.
You know, I'm sorry. I just don't date my son's friends. You know, it's just icky.
And that's pretty much the tone of the humor all the way through. It's you know, it's very gentle. It's perfectly well put together. That guy Rainn Wilson is apparently best known in to many audiences as he's in the US version of The Office. Is it called The Office in America?
I believe it's called The Office.
Have you seen it?
No.
Okay, well, he's in the American version, because I haven't.
We trailed a lot when we were there, but
yeah, no, I haven't seen it, because I didn't go to America with you when you went on that jolly. I stayed here.
Yeah, well, there was no point in taking you. It would have been a waste of money.
Okay. But he's known
it
to
be nice to have had you there.
Thank you for adding that as an afterthought.
Just to add that in.
Yeah, exactly.
You could have come and sat there.
The guy in
University.
Chicago really liked me and wanted to know why I wasn't there, but, you know, obviously I wasn't asked. He's known best to me as the guy behind the counter in Juno, and he's a perfectly fine comedy performer. And the thing sort of trundles along in the manner of, do you remember that film Still Crazy?
Yes.
Well, it's like that. It's
Bill Nighy?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a sort of washed-up old rockers movie. Well, in this case, washed-up old rocker. And he joins the band, and then
Bill Nighy plays essentially the same character in that he did in
Love Actually. He plays exactly the same character. And, you know, it's not terribly funny. It's not terribly problematic. Some of it's quite nice, and some of it, but it's fairly unremarkable. Now, I don't want to completely diss it as saying that, because making a sort of fairly unremarkable comedy is not, you know, is not nothing, because so many people make absolutely terrible comedies that making a fairly unremarkable rock comedy is okay. It's perfectly fine, but it's hampered by what it isn't. And the two things it isn't are this: firstly, it isn't Anvil, which is this thing I just saw recently. It's playing at the LFF. You had a text message from David Morrissey.
Well, I've heard from David that it's a great film, and that I have to go and see it, and that you have to go and see it. But now you're ahead of me, and you've already seen it, and it sounds as though David Morrissey is absolutely right.
Hello, David, and you are so on the money. And it's playing at the LFF, and it's this documentary about this washed-up old rocker band called Anvil, who at one point were going to be absolutely huge, and then didn't become absolutely huge, and then ended up working in really sort of depressing jobs in snowy Canada, and then deciding later that they want to get back together and form the band again and go on tour again. And it is really like real life Spinal Tap. One of the guys actually is called Rob Reiner. One of the guys in the band is actually called Rob Reiner. And you sit there, and for the first 20 minutes of it, you're screaming with laughter and thinking this must be a put up job. But then you start to be moved by it, and you start to fall in love with their plight. And actually, you end up really rooting for them. And it's a documentary, and it's not just laughing at these people. It has real heart to it. Now, one of the things that The Rocker tries to do is have real heart. But in the end, it doesn't get anywhere close to the real washed-up rocker heart of Anvil. And the other thing that The Rocker isn't, which is something which is out this week, which is this film Young at Heart, which is a documentary about this vocal group called Young at Heart, their average age is apparently 81. Have you heard of these people?
No.
Okay.
Group nothing of, to do with the Bluebells.
No, not I'm Falling Down. Oh, no, that was the one they recorded before that, wasn't it? Young at Heart was the one in which the video of it was set in a cafe and had Claire Grogan in it for some bizarre reason. Anyway, never mind. Young at Heart, a octogenarian, largely octogenarian singing group, average age 81, people from 70 all the way through to 90, who specialise in doing cover versions of unlikely rock songs like I Want to Be Sedated and Every Breath You Take and Schizophrenia and Road to Nowhere and this timeless classic. That's not the right clip. Shall we try that again?
Let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you'll be mine, I'll be yours till the end of time.
On Should I Stay or Should I Go? That's a punk song, isn't it?
I would say so. Have you ever heard it before?
Horace Tease, Tease, Tease!
When I'm on my knees, one day's fair, the other's black. So if you want me off your back, then you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
So, on the one hand, obvious comic potential of a bunch of octogenarians doing Clash songs, and yet, what the documentary does, and it does it fairly early on, is it says, no, actually this isn't funny. What it is a group of people who are still as lively and rebellious as they always were, many of whom had interest in lots of different forms of music, taking songs and doing versions of them that, in fact, beyond the obvious comedy of something like that, are very profoundly, strangely moving. One example is that they do a version of that song, Fix You. You know, is it by
Coldplay?
Yeah, who are rubbish. I mean, you know.
Oh, no, then.
Oh, they are.
No, then. Not.
Whinging sanctimonious. I've got something drawn in the back of my hand. You know, yeah. Right. Hey, Gwyn. How you doing, Gwyn? Goop dot.
Which that's supposed to be.
Him. What's he called? You know, that bloke with the...
Chris Martin.
Fine, but...
He doesn't talk like that.
There is a version of Fix You in this, which is absolutely heartbreaking. There's something about hearing them sing that, hearing them sing Road to Nowhere, hearing them sing, you know, Every Breath I Take. And during the course of the documentary, a couple of key members of the band die. And one of the things that's absolutely beautiful about it is it's a film which deals with age, it's a film which deals with death, it's a film which deals with a physical frailty in a way which is completely unsentimental, in a way which is completely accepting of what it is, and says, you know what, it's like that, you know, that old thing about we're all learning to be pensioners. That's what we're all going to be, is that they are basically us, and that's, you know, and they're all the things that matter to them are the same as everybody else. And I found it really moving. I found some of the songs genuinely enchanting. There's an awful lot of comedy in it, but deliberate comedy. At no point is it laughing at its subjects at all. And you get a real sense of that thing, exactly the same thing as I got from that movie Heavy Load, which was my film of the week a couple of weeks ago. We almost missed reviewing it because we ran out of time. It's about the way in which performing music, being up on doing that stuff, can literally keep you young at heart. But it also has a more serious message, which is it's to do with, you know, age and physical decrepitude, and being nothing to do with giving up. I mean, you come out of it thinking it's the liveliest bunch of people I've seen in a long time, and I know it's a hard sell, but believe me, it's a really fine piece of work.
But you wouldn't put the soundtrack CD on in the car?
No, actually, that's not true. I would listen to their version of Fix You. I would listen to their version of Road to Nowhere. Absolutely. I mean, that clip that I played there was a bit of a cheap shot because it's funny, but what I wanted to do was to interest people in the film, because I think it's a hard sell. Somebody said to you, you want to come and see a documentary about a bunch of 80-year-olds singing Clash songs, but believe me, it's worth the investment of your time.
Peter in Birkenhead went to see Heavy Load, a film about happiness, on Mark's recommendation. A brilliant documentary, and now one of my favourite films of all time, sets a new standard for cinema documentaries, riveted to the end.
Yeah, but if you liked Heavy Load, go see Young at Heart, because they, you know, they have a similar, I mean, I think you know, there is a similar ethos at work there.
Paul McElroy, BA Honours, 2-1, Philosophy in English, Large Mortgage, Graying Slightly. Yeah. I like a little bit of biographical detail in there. Autobiographical detail, I guess. Anyway, Paul, thank you. Dear Mickey and Judy, or if you prefer, Mickey and Donald, I have small kids and consequently don't get out much, at least not to the pictures. However, my Mac Mini, other computers are available, cheerfully shows me a whole bunch of trailers for upcoming movies, many of them months in advance. Consequently, could the good doctor confirm my theory, based on trailer alone, mm-hmm, that Beverly Hills Chihuahua, or as my good friend Peter Powell would have said, Beverly Hills Chihuahua, is actually a better film than Burn After Reading. This is because the aforementioned canine sploitation does exactly what it says on the tin, whereas the Coen Brothers film appears to get lost halfway through the trailer, let alone the film.
Well, it is true that there are some movies... I mean, the only irony of that is that I think, as I said before, I think the whole of the Coen Brothers movie is like watching a trailer. It's just a bunch of bits. And anybody who pronounces Chihuahua like that deserves a slap.
It's 12 minutes for Nicholas Duncalf time, and then back with what exciting movie do we get?
Eagle Eye.
Eagle Eye.
Eagle Eye.
With Shia LaBeouf.
How do you say that name?
Well, I think it's Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, Shia...
Something like that.
Sleepy LaBeouf.
Now, I think this text should be read out in this style from Rich in London. Your film critic is zany. His passion is LOL funny. I'm in stitches in my car. Johnny in Canterbury.
Does LOL mean laugh out loud?
Yeah.
Is that what it means? Because I asked somebody that and they said, no, it means something else, but
well,
I can't
tell. Well, lots of love.
Oh, lots of love, okay. But
or,
yeah, he's
or laugh out.
Lots of love funny doesn't make any sense.
But you have to be like under 18, I think.
Do you?
To get away with that.
Is it a text message thing?
Johnny in Canterbury.
Are you committed to the cinema?
Dear Donny and Walter, how in the name of all things sacred can Dr. Walter, similar ranting maniacs, find anything to criticise about The Big Lebowski? If he could suggest any other film which has so many funny and quotable lines as this, then I'm a nihilist and, quote, whatever you say about the tenets of National Socialism, dude, at least it's an ethos. Does the good doctor have an ethos?
Yeah, I do.
What's that then?
Well, how long have you got? I'm right and you're wrong is the short version of it.
That's
I mean, the problem
good.
With The Big Lebowski is it is a classic example of one of those films that loads of people think is really funny, but actually it isn't. And if you just sat down and thought about it for a while, you'd go, oh, no, you're right. It's not funny. It's just all over the shop.
Andrew on the Northern Line, BA Honours, MA Oxon, MSc, BPhil and DPhil. I suspect that's not true and he's just thought, I'm just going to write
you're putting
down
it all
every
down.
Single
Oxon
qualifier.
Is that Oxford?
Oxford, yeah.
Why Oxon?
Latin, I would imagine.
Was there a Latin for Oxford?
We'll check
was
that.
Was it originally occupied? Well, it was, of course, occupied by the Romans at some point, presumably, as all of England was.
Dear Mornington and Crescent, regarding where you used to live. Regarding last week's discussion of stupidest things ever said in the cinema, I have a strong contender. Watching The Return of the Jedi special edition in the late 90s, there were a couple of five-year-old kids in front of us whose parents wouldn't stop them talking continuously. They were clearly under the misconception this was a children's movie. In particular, the boy kept insisting that Luke and Leia were going to get married. After the key reveal, the girl asked him how they could now get married if they were brother and sister. And the boy thought for a moment and then replied, maybe they're special like our guinea pigs. And the parents shut them up
stupid.
After that.
That's quite funny.
It's quite
that's
sweet,
rather
actually.
Charming.
Anyway, more of this...
Or maybe they're from Arkansas.
Interesting stuff in a moment. I don't think... No, you don't want to... That's
no,
why,
I don't want to. That's why I didn't go to America.
Yes, because you come up with...
It's a Bill Hicks gag.
Knee-jerk anti-Americanism. That's where you...
How can I be anti-American? You know... I'm not anti-American. I love America. But I just love laughing at some of it.
It's 7 minutes to four. What else is new, Dr.
Eagle
Kermode?
Eye, the new thriller starring Sleepy LaBeouf, who was the, you know, the go-to guy at the moment for these things, who won the Rising Star Award recently at the BAFTAs, despite the fact that I think he's clearly had a charisma bypass. Big, noisy thriller. Most expensive movie of the week, presumably $80 million. Went to number one in the American box office. Story is, Sleepy LaBeouf is an ordinary schlub, a sort of slacker schlub, and then he suddenly finds there's millions of dollars in his bank account. And then he goes back to his flat, and there's a whole bunch of armaments in his flat, and the feds are at the door, and there's a strange woman on the phone.
Hello?
The FBI will arrive at your apartment in 30 seconds. You must flee the premises.
Who is this?
You've been activated, Jerry.
Who the hell is this?
Your compliance is vital.
How did you get this number?
You now have 24 seconds. Leave your residence. Your destination, the Mathis train station. We will guide you from there.
What is this?
The evidence in your apartment is irrefutable.
Listen.
17 seconds.
I'm hanging this phone up now.
They will seek your arrest for conspiracy. For
I'm hanging this phone up now.
Violating state and local
law. You tell me how you got this number.
Penalty, death.
No, none of this is mine!
Delicate, huh?
No, but that's the sound of the film. There's a little bit of plot, a little bit of dialogue, and then an awful lot of things getting blown up. And so he's been activated. Michelle Monaghan has been activated as well by a sinister voice on the end of a phone.
When you cued the sinister voice on the phone, it was your Jason Statham.
It was,
voice.
Yeah, I know.
And then it just sounded like a robotic woman.
Ah, well done. for noticing exactly what it was. It was a robotic woman.
It was.
There we go. Thank you very much. And the rest of the movie is them running around being watched by surveillance stuff. You know, so everywhere they go, there's a mobile phone watching them. There's a thingy camera watching them. Everything is picking them up because we live in a surveillance age. And it's all about the modern, you know, paranoia about surveillance, except it isn't. What it's really about is a lot of things blowing up. Lots of, even the BBFC, in their guidelines for the classification, I think they give it 12A for moderate action, violence and one strong use of language, say the violent sequences in the film have a focus on action rather than personalised details, with numerous car chases in chase scenes, generally avoiding showing the victims. And that's it. It is numerous car chases and chase sequences and things getting blown up, but it not really hurting anybody.
Well, that's the way you want it.
No, it's not.
No,
because
it's not. I don't want it like that.
Some people have said, like, oh, it's a Hitchcockian movie. Hitchcockian. Yeah, it's Hitchcockian in the same way that DJ Caruso, who directed this, the thing he made before Disturbia, got involved in some peculiar lawsuit about somebody saying it's actually an unauthorised remake of Rear Window. I mean, if now any movie that has any sort of narrative, you know, all tension between two things, Hitchcockian. Hitchcockian must be the most overused word in film criticism. Let's have a total moratorium on anyone ever calling anything Hitchcockian ever again.
It's a word I've never used, ever.
No, but you're not a film critic. No, it's overused in the same way that...
Hitchcockian?
Hitchcockian, no. It's overused in the way that music DJs overuse the, you know, great.
Give me an example of something in which you could use it appropriately, other than a Hitchcock film.
Well, I would say an example of something which is genuinely Hitchcockian is George Sleiser's original version of Spoorloos, Vanishing. That's Hitchcockian.
Right,
yeah, you would agree with that. Fine. Yeah. For the rest of this, what you get is a little idea, conspiracy thriller, you know, with surveillance stuff going on in it. Shia LaBeouf, however you pronounce that name, and Michelle Monaghan running around and stuff blowing up and stuff blowing up and stuff blowing up and stuff blowing up, and then some more stuff blows up and then some more stuff blows up and then some more stuff blows up. And you're going, fine. Somewhere in the back of all this, there's probably a film, like one of those films they used to make in the 70s, only I can't hear it because all I can hear is bang, crash, bang.
Is it a Michael Bay film?
No, but it is guilty. Thank you so much. Honestly, you're on fire today.
Thank you.
It is guilty of
the
great crime of modern cinema, which is the Bayification of every movie that looks like being a blockbuster. Oh, they all look like they're directed by Michael Bay, and frankly, they might as well be. It's dumb as nuts. And in the back of all of this, you think there is an idea, because actually when it's all revealed how this conspiracy came about, there's a sort of thread somewhere of a subversive idea, but it's buried under a truck which is on fire and being hurtled. And the thing is that when you say that, loads of chase sequences, somebody says, oh, I like a movie with a good chase sequence, but the problem is CGI chase sequences don't count anyway. It's just there's no pain, no gain. You don't feel that there's anything to risk in any of it. It's just, you know, boom, crash, boom, crash, boom, crash, you know, wake me up when they feel. I mean, at one point, I sort of vaguely nodded off, woke up, this the same chase appeared to be going on.
David Wirral, Oxen is short for the Latin Oxeniensis. Okay?
Which means
Oxford.
That Oxeniensis is...
Oxfordshire.
Oxeniensis is where Asterix the Gaul would have gone to.
There's a kids' movie which we need to mention.
Igor.
It's Igor and it's not Igor.
No, it's not. Because it actually says on the notes, I've got them here, it says Igor and then underneath Igor.
Tell me about Igor.
Okay, so the story is, have we got time for a clip or not?
Well, how long is the clip?
We probably haven't got time for a clip, so we'll do it.
How long is the clip?
I don't know, it's for 50 seconds. Okay, have the clip. Here we go.
Igors aren't allowed to invent, but I still manage to work on my own inventions in secret. And this new one is going to be the one that proves that I'm the biggest evil genius of them all, and not just another...
Igor!
Once they see what I can do, I'll have a whole new life, and I'll never have to answer to another master again. Sorry, master.
What did you say?
Sorry, master. I was in the bathroom. Had a bat stuck in the belfry, if you know what I mean, master.
I don't want to hear your toilet memoirs, you cretin. I give you 5 minutes a week to take care of your business. I'm not running a resort here. Now, get over there and pull the switch.
Yes, master.
We didn't have time for that.
No, we didn't. John Cleese, John Cusack, elsewhere in the movie, Eddie Izzard, who now seems to be in every animated, and he's always the best thing. You know, he does, oh, ha, 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 everything made of cheese, jam, blah, blah, blah. That's what he does.
Fish.
The problem with Igor is this. It's like watching a Tim Burton movie without all the Tim Burton taken out. It's like, everything about it says, I am a Tim Burton film. And yet, if Tim Burton had made it, it wouldn't have had the sunny ending, and it would have been a lot more interesting and a lot more, you know, coherent, and would have made a lot more sense. And if you want to watch a Tim Burton movie, you know what? All the Tim Burton movies are currently available on DVD. Go and watch a Tim Burton movie.
Movie of the week?
Young at Heart.
James Taylor says, "Dear Anakin and Luke, people on a number of websites refer to the aforementioned actor as Shia LaDouche, and that's and that's how you pronounce his name." Mark, have a very good weekend.
And you.
See you next week. Okay. We're back on Monday at 1 o'clock.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.